Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The Around the NFL Podcast.
Know you're going to like it in their city.
Our city, our adopted city of Los Angeles, will be the host of the Wrestling Bowl. Welcome to the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm in the studio, the stage, really, stage five here at NFL Network, filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. Championship Sunday is in the books. And yes, somehow, some way, the football gods, whoever's out there, deemed it necessary that this year would be the one where the Cincinnati Bengals come out of nowhere and advance to the Super Bowl to face none other than the Los Angeles Rams. The Bengals, Mark, Chris Wessling's boyhood team, the man that he had such a difficult relationship with, ending with a divorce and a dossier. And now he's no longer with us, and we're wondering how Wes would feel. And then Lakeisha, his loyal wife, that amazing woman who is a diehard Rams fan. Those two teams are playing for the Lombardi Trophy 2 weeks from tonight.
I cannot think of anything that has happened during our podcast that comes anywhere close to these events. I've been watching football since 1986. This is the most interesting development I can remember in my entire life. I'm a Browns fan. Who is, you know, and a lot of people in Cleveland, Bengals fans wouldn't be rooting for the Browns. Forget all that. This is from somewhere completely different, a totally different realm. And just watching Lakeisha's reactions today on Twitter, on social media, and just to have it capped with a Rams win as well. I mean, this is one of the most improbable sporting conclusions to pre-Super Bowl. Any sport, I'm dumbfounded. I'm still processing the whole thing.
Right. To be clear, it's like it's the Lakeisha Wessling Super Bowl. You know, the Wessling brothers, they got the Bengals. They got no ties for the Rams. Lakeisha travels with the Rams, diehard St. Louis Rams fans, moves out here the same time that they do and lives and dies by them. But I don't know if she was rooting any harder at the stadium for that Rams game than she was at her house where we watched the Bengals pull that game off. And it's just like sport. Yeah, sports are – they're stupid sort of, but it's hard not to think of like Wes's talk where he would be like, you have to resign yourself about what the ultimate meaninglessness is of like watching sports and watching which way an oblong ball – bounces, and yet like it creates moments like that. Like that was an overwhelming moment, and it almost took a little while during that NFC championship game to like get cranking back up, because you're just feeling a lot. You're feeling a lot watching that thing go through, and it's great to see Keisha especially living that moment.
Oh, it's so great. And yeah, like we, you know, knew Wes so well, so when everyone is celebrating the fact that Cincinnati's on this improbable run, you wonder how Wes felt. But Lakeisha has, obviously, the way she sees it is like that is Wes like still with us and connected to her and connected to us, them going on this incredible run. So, you know.
Yeah, and we'll get into the game, but I do, since we're talking this now, like she brought out the sage. I feel like she saged the Bengals
into, the sage came out.
You know, you talk about
I was unable to make it today. So
speaking what something into existence, which Keisha believes in that too, but she saged this into existence. She brought out the sage at 14-3. Was not looking good at that moment for the Bengals. At various points when it also wasn't looking good in the second half, she brought in, out the sage, and that sage was just cranking towards the end of the
game.
She's
like a Stevie Nicks figure for the 21st century. I'm way into her witch-like qualities now.
I mean, the city of Cincinnati, there's a lot of homes and mansions. I think you just give her a mansion at this point. I mean, she ushered this long-lost team into the Super Bowl.
Right. Tony Reale had this tweet last week, the host of Around the Horn, and it was at the two-minute warning of the Bills-Chiefs game, but I was thinking about it as they were lining up for that kick in the Bengals game, and he just tweeted out while they were at the commercial break, like, let's all live in this moment forever. And that was like that sports to me is like there was that one moment in that Bengals game where you don't know what's going to happen next, and everything that you've watched all season has led to this, and you're just like totally pure being existence. And when you got Kick Fearson on your side, he comes through and delivers.
Unbelievable. And, you know, we'll get into it. Like, I had a chance to lock up the lock title, and I'm in an all-time fade. But I'll tell you what, like, how could I be rooting against Cincinnati during that comeback? I wasn't. It was like, okay, that'd be cool if I have the trophy, but this is even better. And then for the Rams to win too, I think it's a really, in what's been a tremendously difficult couple of years behind the scenes for our show, just doing the show in general has been a challenge at times, and just finding our footing. For this to be the outcome of the first full season after we lost Wes, I don't know, it just, you know, you can't make it up. It's the stuff of movies, and we get one more game to determine a champion. So we're going to go through both games. We'll start with what happened at Arrowhead Field. And just from a pure game, there is all this stuff that's all personal to us, but just from a pure game standpoint, that was one of the more mystifying games I can remember about how things can change in an instant. So let's get into it. Let's head to Arrowhead Field and break down the AFC Championship game.
Snap to Mahomes, rolls the shoulder, now in trouble. Now moving to his left, back to his right. Wiley gives him a block to try to keep him alive. Now he fires late for the end zone, caught! Right side, Kelsey on the touchdown! Kansas City!
Burrow back to throw, short pass, caught by Pirine. Pirine down to the 30, nice. Sideline, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, yeah. Touchdown! Bengals! Shotgun snap to Burrow, throws it into the end zone for Chase. He leaps, yeah. He's got it!
24-21 Cincinnati. Placement is down. Butker's kick is good. And we are going to overtime.
And now the Bengals will turn to their rookie kicker, Evan McPherson. 4 years ago, he was a senior in high school in tiny Fort Payne, Alabama. Now the Bengals' Super Bowl chances rest on his right foot. The kick is up. Yeah. Good! Coffin nails!
Bam! Bam!
It is no fluke. It is a fact. The Cincinnati Bengals are headed to Super Bowl 56.
Oh, Ricky, you went supersized on us, and I love it. Oh, and the Bongos are out. Dan Hort, Dave Lapham, KCKY, WCKY also. That was Mitch Holtis on Chiefs Radio. Unbelievable.
Best bongo game ever.
Who day? Evan McPherson.
McFearless.
Kicked a 31-yard field goal with 9:22 left in overtime. After the Cincinnati Bengals wiped up the biggest deficit in championship game history on the road at Arrowhead. 27-24. Cincinnati, by the way, 3-0 all time in AFC championship games. Advance to the Super Bowl, where they will attempt to win their first Lombardi Trophy, sending the Chiefs home in stunning, stunning fashion. And to the point that I was making just minutes ago, Greg, this game obviously turns in a way no one can imagine. Kansas City comes out of the gate like they, you know, were just picked up where they left off against the Bills. Going up and down the field, they get ahead 21-3. They give up a touchdown. It's 21-10, but they march in the final minute of the half. And then Patrick Mahomes begins what, for me, turned into about a 90-minute meltdown, which I could have never predicted. One of the more surprising things, like we talked about last week, the nature of the game, the Chiefs-Bills game, I thought it was the best game of the ATN era. One of the more mystifying things I could ever remember is what happened to Mahomes from that final pass of the first half, short of the goal line, tackled. They go into the half with 0 points. Leads to the momentum building for Cincinnati. They get back into the game and obviously come back to win it. But the Chiefs and the Mahomes meltdown on offense after being unstoppable early in the game, how do you make sense of it?
I'm glad you started there in the last two plays of the first half. First and goal, Cincinnati 1 yard line, 9 seconds left for the Chiefs. At that point, they're up 21-10. We can get into the Bengals drive before that later, which was an important drive. He has an incompletion left. At that point, there's 5 seconds left, and they decide to run another play, which I think makes sense. You can easily get another play, and if not, you get three, and Mahomes fritz out. And he said after the game, he knew the situation, although he did try to make a timeout. It almost felt like that Tom Brady moment where he thought there was an extra down, and he didn't know the timeout situation, and he just wasn't cool. He wasn't in the moment, he fritzed out and he throws it to Hill in the flat, and that is just an incredible mistake. But it's still 21-10.
And you're getting the ball at half.
And you're getting the ball in the second half. But they didn't. The Chiefs never returned in the 8 drives starting at the end of that. You know, in the second half, they went for 83 yards. It's just hard to believe. In the 7 drives in the second half in overtime, they go for 83 yards. They have more than one first down one time. He throws 2 interceptions. They get 3 points. It's like that. It's just hard to believe that they went 3 and out 4 separate times, including in overtime, and you had one first down in the other ones. It's insane.
And they asked Andy Reid, what did you notice that the Bengals did differently in the second half defensively? He said, they played a little bit more man coverage, but they didn't make any major adjustments. I thought it was the rare example of Patrick Mahomes with the events you just described that unfolded before the half that got into his head. I thought that he was pressing in the second half, too. It was interesting as I was watching the raw feed, and Romo was sort of screaming at the production team, get me a clip of what Mahomes' eyes and what his face are doing after that meltdown before the half, because he wanted to see if he could notice a visual difference. And I think that this was Mahomes kind of crumbling. I mean, Tyreek Hill vanished in the second half, and the Bengals are this team that's been on this journey for week after week that if you let them back in, because their offense has not been closing drives, they're imperfect too, this just became their game. And it's just one of the more peculiar things we've seen, because the Chiefs have been on such a hot roll, obviously, but it harks back to the quizzical performance on their offense earlier on in the year. We kind of got both Chiefs teams today.
Yeah, and if you look at the splits of going back to the Week 17 Chiefs-Bengals game, Mahomes and the offense disappeared in that game as well. But this was different, and I think, well, that's one of the great things about sports and the more mystifying things about sports. I keep on using that word because that's the only thing that I could, the word that I, that best
that kind of
describes
day.
How I'm trying to make sense of that, because Mahomes was really at his very best, the best we've ever seen him throughout that Bills game, throughout the first, you know, 2 quarters of this game, and he was on tilt. And like, if you ask me who in the league do I have to never worry about going on tilt in a big spot, Brady's going to be number one, but Mahomes would have been number two. And you have to give credit to Lou Anarumo and the Bengals staff, because obviously there were adjustments that were made. But I'm just wondering how you process that. Because even look, Greg, like, we can get into that, the final series of regulation.
Right. I think if you can kind of combine those two series, that really tells you a great story.
They have a first
story.
And goal, and you're figuring, okay, they nearly gave this away, but they're whittling the clock down. They're gonna execute here, score the touchdown with 24 seconds left or whatever, and get out of there with the win. But the plays, taking the sacks, and then the last sack that led to the fumble. It's like, man, he just took a 14-yard sack or whatever it was and fumbled in the biggest moment of the season. It's like, this is Patrick Mahomes. I still can't believe it. I can't believe it.
That was a great play by Sam Hubbard, and it could have been the play that Bengals fans remembered for the rest of their lives if the ball bounces a little different and the Bengals fall on that. But you're right. They had first and goal at the 5-yard line with a minute 30 to go. They're trailing by 3 at that time. At that point, they were on the only decent drive that they had in all of the second half or overtime. And they were trying to get the Bengals to get rid of their timeout. So they run it on first down, which I think totally made sense. See if you can get in. If not, you force the Bengals to take their timeout. Now there's 1:26 left. And I do wonder if the talk with Mahomes on the sideline was like, don't throw an incompletion.
Right.
You know, do not stop the clock here. You know, if you have to take a sack, you take it. And it was really a story in the second half. I thought, okay, maybe they didn't adjust too much. I thought I read some and saw some that they played a little more man coverage. If you ever want like the vindication of just rushing three, this was it. Because this second half of this game, it was a whole lot of rushing three, dropping 8 into coverage and tackling better, the Bengals did, playing coverage better. But then you get to the spot, where he takes a sack to back up 5 yards. Again, that's Hubbard. I mean, so those are two massive plays by Hubbard in a row. They take the timeout again. And you're right. He just was kind of running around, lost. You have to give credit. But a lot of it, I think, was just like the situation being too much, like trying to figure out what the situational football of it all was instead of just going and trying to score a touchdown.
But that's what's so atypical about it, because this offense has been together for years at the highest mountaintops of the NFL. And for them suddenly to enter into a state of confusion is, to your point, it's just totally mystifying. Sometimes things just happen and there isn't all a logical explanation for it in the NFL. And this is one of those times for me.
It's something where we need like someone who gets the All-22 and watches. Cause I'm just curious, like what Mahomes was looking at in a lot of these plays. He held the ball so long for all the second half. So you have to give a lot of credit to the Bengals secondary, but it also, was he being too cautious? Like we'll have to look.
And then you go to after that meltdown in the red zone and Butker bailed you out. It wasn't a hard kick, but it went from being either a touchdown to, 20-yard field goal to now he's kicking from 45 and he splits the uprights. Butker's a great kicker. You go to overtime, they win the coin toss after all the talk that we've heard all week about how overtime's not fair. And he nearly throws a pick six that Eli Apple drops.
Oh, that talk about another play that would have been.
And then
been
two plays later,
history.
He throws another one up for grabs, trying to force it to Tyreek Hill, who went invisible in the second half of this game, gets intercepted. And that is, and the Bengals are an incredible story, and I can't wait to watch them, and I hope they win the Super Bowl. But I'll always remember Mahomes and the offense short-circuiting. That's, to me, the thing that's great about sports, but also will drive you crazy because you think you have things figured out, and then something like this happens. The moment can get anyone, and I think it got Mahomes.
Well, and I also think about Kansas City's defense after the Von Bell interception, where it was like, you have a chance to squelch the Bengals as well. And Joe Mixon, who has not, necessarily thrived on the ground in the playoffs at all, ran through them over and over and over. And it's just like, they've seemed like ghosts at the end of this game, the Chiefs.
They won the coin toss and they go crazy. And the Chiefs Twitter account says like, we won the coin toss.
Did you see Josh Allen's tweet?
No, I didn't.
What was it, Ricky?
It was right when the coin toss happened and he called heads and it was tails. Josh Allen tweeted pain, period.
Yeah. But
brilliant.
And like they won the coin toss and there was like, oh my God, here we go again. And I was thinking they've just had 8 straight drives, right, where they haven't had a touchdown. They just had 7 where they had 3 points. And especially that the end sequence. I mean, I think the Bengals defense has to get a lot of credit. Hendrickson was getting some pressure on him. He was in and out with injuries. Hubbard, like I said, played well. But this has been a veteran defense. Awuzie was one of the biggest free agent signings of the offseason. Von Bell, Jesse Bates is the one who ends up breaking up the pass in overtime that turns into the interception that Bell gets. He's an all-pro type of player. And even Eli Apple, I was happy for him because my immediate thought when he dropped that pass was, if Chris was here, if Wes was here, he would be talking about the play he talked about more than any other as a Bengals fan,
yep.
The Lewis Phillips play, dropping the pass in the end zone. But this time, it didn't come back to bite them.
Well, and in that game, that Super Bowl, Montana throws the game-winning touchdown right after. So it's like you're looking at the lost opportunity by the Bengals. This time around, they did it. I mean, I spent most of this game thinking that Cincy's offense, too, lacked the aggressiveness to come into this thing and just have – put it all out there. And for much of the game until like the second half really got cooking, they seemed real tight. I mean, at one point deep into the second quarter, Burrow had 28 yards and 5 straight incompletions, which is just not typical Joe Burrow business.
Yeah, he was 6 for 13 at one point. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, boys, hold it right there. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back. No, it was 6, and you know, he turned it on with the rest of the Bengals, and now he's the, you know, the hero of this team and the guy that is wearing a diamond chain and saying, I make way too much money for my diamonds not to be real. I mean, this man is feeling himself. He was, after the game, he talked about being an Ohio kid, now taking the Bengals to the Super Bowl.
That's something I'm really proud of, being from Ohio, being the quarterback of the Bengals. It's 2.5 hours from my hometown. This is something I've always wanted, playing the Super Bowl, and I couldn't be with a better group of guys.
And we did see Mike Brown also on the riser, and you know, we're talking about, or we're texting about, like, you know, where is Wes coming down when he's watching this situation? And the Wessing brothers, we were texting with them, and Greg, I thought you summed it up well, that he would have been feeling the moment until that happened, maybe.
Exactly.
Does Mike Brown, it's funny, like, does Mike Brown get credit for anything here? Or is it like the whole angle and like, it's all, a lot of it is just good fortune, bad fortune. They had the worst record when Joe Burrow showed up as the number one overall pick. Like, how much is connected directly to just lucking into that? And then, you know, you do a nice job building around him and things come together faster than normal. But as an organization, like, we had Paul Daynard,
yeah,
on from The Athletic, and he explained some changes they were making behind the scenes to try to get more up to the times. And certainly it seems like they, whatever they did has worked, because they seem very set up now moving forward with Burrow.
I mean, if anything, with Mike Brown, he's given say, power, and influenced other people. And like,
yes,
if you go back even to that 2015 team, you could look and say they're the best roster in the AFC. It's like they, well, I think some of the stuff that Wes wrote that massive and collected that massive folder about was the fact that they were zigging in the wrong way when everyone else was zagging. They had no scouting department. They didn't spend money in a free agency. All that's changed. And we don't know what Wes would think, but the one thing I am sure of is that Joe Burrow changes everything for the Bengals historically going forward for the next 15 plus years. And I would struggle to think he wouldn't be totally enamored with the club that we've watched over the last couple weeks.
Absolutely. You're reminding me of 2015 when Wes was really into Duke Tobin. I don't know if you remember, he wrote a whole piece about Duke Tobin. He actually went and asked Duke Tobin questions at the combine, Wes was loath to do. And I think that's a really good point, that Mike Brown has changed the style of their ownership, in that I think he's let guys like Duke Tobin be a real GM, even though he doesn't have the title, I don't believe. Be a real GM. His daughter, Katie Blackburn, who's actually has a lot of respect, you know, within the NFL and the organization, kind of run the organization her way. And you saw so many of those players step up today, and you saw their drafting step up. I mean, not just Ja'Marr Chase, but I want to go through sort of how they came back at some point. But one catch that really stands out to me is the Higgins catch in overtime.
Huge.
His arms are getting raked on that play. They weren't calling anything in this game. Defensive backs could maim the opposing receivers, and they did to Higgins right on a potential touchdown in the first half, which the Bengals were not happy with. And Higgins, who had 6 for 103, I thought that was a theme today. Higgins and OBJ, the wide receiver too, showing, man, if you have two guys on the outside, it is so tough to stop. And this was a Higgins day. And that catch in overtime was very difficult and really was the key play in that winning drive before Mixon got a couple big runs.
Where do you go from here if you're the Chiefs? That's something. That's a tough loss. That's one that will stick to the ribs, just like we talked about the Packers loss last week. They now, you know, they had that game in their back pocket at 21-3, and that's unbelievable.
I mean,
the turn of events.
The tweets and the like, just the feeling of that game, like. Don't you think the Chiefs felt like they were going to the Super Bowl, that there wasn't even
I think they took their foot off the gas.
I think, like, everybody felt that way, right? It just seemed like, okay, this was one – we talked about it on the network show. Like, this felt like a close game. The Bengals could steal it potentially, but also there was a possibility this was like a 42-24 game, just because the way Kansas City looked, they could run the Bengals out of that building, and it didn't work out that way, obviously. Any other thoughts about the comeback or anything?
The one thing that happened early to Kansas City, and they got into that, you know, the time issue at the end of the first half, was when Andy Reid challenged a play. They got the challenge, but he took a timeout beforehand, and it stripped them of an early timeout that ended up costing them. I mean, you know, it's like Andy Reid used to get tagged with this time management thing all the time. He's escaped a lot of that because he has one of the best quarterbacks we've ever watched. But to your point about where we thought the Chiefs would be at this point compared to where they were, it reminds me a lot of the 2010 Packers, where you have Aaron Rodgers, the sky's the limit, they never get back there to win, they never win another title, and it just shows you how elusive it is, because now Kansas City goes into an offseason having swallowed an evil pill.
Well, there's some scarring on this team now. You had the Super Bowl last year where Mahomes got abused and physically wrecked, and then you have this game, which is something to collapse, a historic collapse, biggest blown lead ever in the championship Sunday. There is just this level of invincibility that Mahomes had in those initial seasons that now they don't quite feel that way. Now a team's gone again into Arrowhead in the AFC title game, and now you have Burrow and the Bengals saying, listen, this is not your conference anymore. This is our time, and it snuck up on everybody, because look where everyone was picking Cincinnati before the season. Look where they were at the beginning of the season on my power rankings. Like, this was a team that was not ready or supposed to be making this jump, and yet they have.
Look where they were when I backed off this a little bit and pronounced that they were going to take over the conference back in, like, November.
I went to see the NFL.com midseason predictions, and no one at the entire NFL.com media group out of 30 people had the Bengals in the playoffs at midseason. Not one person had them even as a wild card team then, which it actually is disrespect. They probably were 5-4 then. I think it was coming off their 2-game losing
streak.
So it was a weird timing. But not one person even had them in the playoffs at that point. The Mahomes thing.
Mark, speak on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you didn't then. Yeah.
I was drifting, looking at my notes. What's happening?
Well, you didn't even have them in the playoffs in the midseason.
Well, no. I mean, I would say my directive would be there's probably 55 people that make those predictions. Fire all of them. Well, start over with an entirely new collection of individuals.
You do feel for Andy Reid, who has, man, he has taken some tough losses over the years, especially in the conference championship weekend. And look, not everything's about the Patriots, but I do think – these sort of games do remind you how just brutal, how impossible it is for what they accomplished, like how tough that will be to repeat, even when you have Patrick Mahomes. Because they have hosted four straight AFC championships. Like, that is so Patriots. Like, that's like this other level that even ahead of where the Packers are at of, like, can you get the one or two seed every year? Like, that's like the highest almost level you could reach. And the Chiefs are even above that. But even on another level above that, you have to actually, like, finish each one of these games out and get through the gauntlet. And that, it's like, man, that's tough to do year after year. 21-3 with 2:18 left in the second quarter, and the Bengals got the ball. And you mentioned how they weren't aggressive all day, and that was driving me crazy. They weren't throwing on first down. They were running a ton. They had a play-action pass on the first play of that drive for a big gainer up the field. Can't remember who it was to, either Boyd or a tight end. Got that drive going and ended up scoring later, and then they did settle in and get a little more aggressive. But the thing that to me was just in the comeback most important about Burrow was he wasn't going down. Like, he only got sacked one time in this game. Mm-hmm. And his legs, and he said this after the game in an interview with Ross Tucker, actually, I was listening to on the way in, that some people, you know, dismiss my legs. Like, they don't think I can run, and they ended up spying me a little bit towards the end of that game, and that really was the difference in some of these field goal drives.
Especially the play. I mean, this is when you started to feel like the football gods are operating on a different level here. When he evaded Chris Jones twice on that one play, they showed Chris Jones up close after, and you could just see he knew that that thing had slipped away. Can I read one absurd tweet that came out of Kansas City after this? KMBC, I'm assuming that's a television station. This was their tweet after the Chiefs melted. In all caps, against all odds, : we were never supposed to be here. We were never meant to make it this far. But against all odds, we did. What a season. Thank you for the incredible ride. We will always be Chiefs Kingdom. Wait a minute. Excuse me, but every single sentient human being above toddler level assumed that they would be here.
You just have to look at it this way.
And it's a news organization saying we, which is kind of funny.
Just utterly bizarre.
That tweet makes more sense if you imagine an idiot wrote it.
Well, that's not who I'd hire in that position.
Chiefs fans got into this thing of, like, everyone discounted us and everyone gave up on us. And, like, why is that the thing that gets you going and, like, fires you? Because that's true. Some people did. But, like, not many. I went back to look at that midseason thing, for instance, everyone still had them winning the division and many more people than not had them go into the Super Bowl.
Weren't we just simply saying we expect them to be nearly perfect? And they played nearly perfect first half up until
that
crumbling.
We're all in agreement here. It was a ludicrous tweet, but I'm glad it went viral. Boys, would you like to step behind the velvet ropes? Because I think there's one other figure we need to discuss.
Okay.
Sure.
In the non-Justin Tucker category, I can't remember ever seeing a kicker more locked in than the rookie fifth rounder, Evan McPherson. Mm. He went 4-for-4 again today. He went 4-for-4 last week. He went 4-for-4 the week before that. He is 12-for-12 in the playoffs. Every week has had a 50-yarder. Massive 50-yard bomb in this game as well. And that is, he is a legitimate, again, don't sleep on this, weapon 2 weeks from Sunday across the street. Because he is, not that I ever get behind Jay Feely's analysis on CBS telecast, but he made a point that carries across anything else. He has no battle scars on him. He doesn't know anything but success, and you can tell that's just flowing through him. He's been unbelievable for them.
I was like, he kicked a 52. It was a 52-yarder to take the lead in the fourth quarter of the AFC Championship.
Like, it was nothing.
And I had no worry at all. Forget the 31-yarder to win it. Like, of course that one's going in. No concern at all. It changes how they play offense, because that was part of the comeback, was picking up 3 points in a handful of spots. They only had one touchdown actually during the second half. And that's why the Burrow-Brady thing, and I did feel like early in this week, they're going to win this game somehow. I don't know how they're going to win this game. And in the Burrow-Brady thing, it's maybe forced, but there are little things that I think winning plays, not just like the running and stuff, like, but avoiding the sacks and making the smart decisions at the smart moments. And, like, that's where the luck is. That's, well, like, if you want to call it luck, that's where the luck is.
You look into the face, into the visage, and, like, it's like he's so unflappable. I mean, it's like you're the same way that Tony Romo had run out of verbal concepts to describe Mahomes, and it's, you know, all the stuff he does. You're going to get there with Burrow. I mean, they have Burrow and the new Justin Tucker. You would have bet houses in the opposite direction that the entire division would be looking up at the Bengals forever, and that's where they are right now.
Can we talk Tony Romo?
Yeah. I do have a couple other little things.
I know you do, Greg. But this Tony Romo telecast, coming off last week where I sang his praises, and I thought he had an excellent Bills-Chiefs game, he was not at his best in this game, and he had his biggest flub to me since he's been doing television when it was the last possession of regulation and the Chiefs are knocking on the door. It's first and goal from the 9. And he begins to tell the audience, this is our conduit, this is our expert, our former player. He's telling the audience, should Cincinnati, even though they have a 3-point lead, let the Chiefs score a touchdown so they will have enough time to get the ball back? It's like, bro, this game, you're winning this game. You don't want to give up a touchdown to go behind so you have 47 seconds. That was, I couldn't believe he was saying that. It's almost like he didn't know the score.
That was an insane thing for Romo to say. In a normal game, you know, you knew where he was going. Like if it was the first Bengals Chiefs game and it was just all offense back and forth, but that's, even then, you can't think that way because there's Malcolm Butler. There's like too many times of doing exactly what the Bengals did.
And
in
then
that
he moment. Was there was a red challenge flag, and he was thinking that they should challenge an illegal procedure, like lining up the wrong way, which you can't challenge either.
Well, just he got caught not knowing the nuance on that one. Like you can't challenge.
It's part of his job too. It was a bad game.
He was thinking the worst possible scenario was giving up a touchdown with 20 seconds left or whatever it was going to be, which would have been. But, you know, the best possible scenario is Sam Hubbard forces a fumble on Patrick Mahomes, which is exactly what happened.
And
you got to give your guys a chance to go do that.
But you can't even float that as a theory when Cincinnati has, like, 7 consecutive stops on defense, basically, before that drive. You can't be like, give up the touchdown to fall behind in the AFC title game in the last 41 seconds.
Right, they were owned. I mean, the drives were 16 yards, 17 yards, 7 yards, negative 2 yards, negative 4 yards, and then they had the 3-and-out and overtime.
Stunning.
It is crazy. I do just want to remind you that despite it looking dry on camera today, the rain was out in Cincinnati. We're on an 8-2 heater. The Rainmaker. Forget +7. I should have gone money line and locked it up like Mark Sessler, but it all works out anyways. They won it.
Ooh.
They won it.
Does it get you a little uncomfortable, Mark, when Greg gets this giddy? Sometimes energy.
It's Greg's materialism that gets on my radar just a bit.
By the way, the Rainmaker's coming back out. Grab that early Bengals +4 line for the Super Bowl because we're riding the Bengals to
right.
the end. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
that line might change.
And let me, I have an announcement to make. I'm going to call my own press conference. I am in the midst of a collapse in the locks competition. Listen, I have no regrets about my strategy here in the playoffs. The strategy was get behind the best quarterbacks and the superior teams. And I thought that I was doing that. And yet Aaron Rodgers and the Packers let me down. And then Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs let me down. And I will tell you this, Mark, and this is a show of respect to not just you, but the game. We will not have a tie. We will not have a tie. And I think given the nature of my picks here, I'm going to cede, you know, the prediction. I want you to pick the team you want to win the Super Bowl or think they will. I will go the other way, and
like
we will
that.
Find out who wins the title. If I'm going to collapse, I want to collapse into a tie. I want to either somehow survive, like the Rams did last weekend in Tampa, or go down in infamy.
I'd like
and
it.
And I think it's a great sign and
well,
a great
I, and
show
I think
of character
I, know, I think
by
I
me.
Know who Mark Sessler's picking, and maybe just for luck's sake, we should keep it that way because you've gone against the Bengals, Dan, all 3 weeks here. So just for the luck of it all.
Well,
wherever Mark goes, I have to go the other way.
That was really admirable of you.
Thank you very much.
That seems
like
crazy.
Really
it seems crazy, though.
I'm like waiting for the kicker. Like I'm waiting for him to be like, psych.
Well, I think the kicker was that entire speech was to set up Dan as a highly noble figure. I mean, I'm only in this position because I had a 4-game skid prior to your skid. So it's forced us
but
to
it seems crazy.
Way.
Don't you want to fully root for the Bengals in the Super Bowl, you know?
Well, but Greg, like that we're saving that for later in the week. That's well, how you know,
it's called a tease.
You spoiler. Build drama. Tease. You build spoiler. Drama to some degree.
Major tease.
Spoiler.
But a lot of people are coming at you, Dan, also, and it's like, listen, we've been doing this thing for years, and it's like we're not like at each other's throats over this. Like it's going to go down in proper fashion. We tied
like,
one other time.
That was like 5 weeks ago, one Sunday show. There was one.
Right, there was.
I have been annoyed, but I was annoyed with my own epic failure. I'm feeling pretty good right now.
I had a gash across my throat one Sunday night, as I recall.
Well, there's a lot to be said to take this thing. But
listen, the Packers, they got me mad last week because that was a gag job. The Cincinnati Bengals coming back in Arrowhead, I could live with that. I'll take that L. And I, by the way, my other pick for this weekend was the Niners. So again, it doesn't matter. Right now, I'm on a cold streak as you were in December.
And
so.
To that point, like I wrote down something to myself that I stopped asking for anything from the NFL, and it started to give me a lot of great things. And like that's to me, I think something is happening here that we have no control over. I mean, we have no control over anything, but I'm along for the ride.
That's why I've tried to keep in control and playing as from ahead as the favorite to try to stay in control. I'm throwing my hands up and I said, do what you must
sure.
with me.
Right.
Fantasy. Like
I'll be on
football
the Bengals.
Gods.
Control me.
Bend me. Shape me.
Yeah.
If you didn't,
you know, lose this lock. If the Bengals hadn't come from behind, though, we would not have gotten Chris Rose on NFL Network with a pretty cool moment tonight.
They're kicking it on third down. He was 4 for 4. This one's for Wes. Money
Mac. Awesome. Chris Rose, we got to know Chris this season on Sunday nights, watching Sunday Night Football with him in the big theater. He's a really good guy, and that was nice. Nice little.
And he's a Browns fan. And so I think everyone is just, no matter who you are, who you were, who the Bengals were to you in the past, your heart needs to not even exist. There must be something dark and lost inside of you if you can't kind of feel this Bengals team. And I do think it's one of those Super Bowls, and the Rams are cool too, but we're like 95% of people are going to be like,
spoiler,
we're pretty sure who we're into in this game.
Sure.
Hearing that was, there was something about hearing that. It was kind of like seeing Wes at London that like hit me more than even anything watching at Keisha's and everything. Something about hearing like on NFL Network him saying like this one's for Wes. It's just like it's bigger than just Wes and the podcast and the Bengals. It's awesome. And all the messages from everyone today has been awesome.
Very yeah. cool. Yes. And so many people feel the same way we do, that just something strange is in the air. And as difficult as this is, been without Wes, this has been a nice little thing that we've been able to enjoy together. All right, let's take a break and talk about the game that produced the NFC champion and, yes, the Cincinnati Bengals opponent in Super Bowl 56. Yeah, the Bengals going to the Super Bowl. Let's take a break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Second and 13, 49ers go empty. Garoppolo looks right, throws Deebo. Tunnel screen block from Jennings, breaks a tackle. Deebo Samuel, 20, 15, 10, 5. Deebo diving for the end zone right up there. Touchdown! San Francisco!
Calling for the snap, along the shotgun. Against a four-man rush, clean platform. He deals left side. Cooper Kupp in the end zone! He's a cheat code! Touchdown, Cooper Kupp! Touchdown, LA! Snapback, hold down. The kick is on the way, and it is right down the middle. Matt Gay from 30 for a 20-17 lead with 1:46 remain. Snap back to Garoppolo. Pocket crumbling. He spins out. He's hit. He's wrapped up. He flips it forward. It's tipped. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. Aaron Donald got pressure on Garoppolo, and Traven Howard clinches the NFC Championship game.
Hey, how about that? My buddy, my picnic pal, J.B. Long, with the call of his life, KSPN. Also heard Greg Papa at KNBR up in the Bay Area. And the Los Angeles Rams down 17-7 in the fourth quarter. The place going nuts. Everybody in red, it felt like. And it seemed like once again that the Los Angeles Rams and their coach, Sean McVay, were going to get done in by Kyle Shanahan and those Niners who had beat them six times in a row and now had a double-digit fourth-quarter lead. And yet, the Rams get a big touchdown from Cooper Kupp, who's been doing it all year, one of the greatest wide receiver seasons of all time. Then they get the big stop on defense. They are able to take control of the game, take the lead, and close it out with, yes, Aaron Donald and friends getting it done. 20-17, the final. The Rams are back in the Super Bowl for the second time in, what is it, 3 years with McVay or four?
Four.
For the second time in 4 years. And this one, Mark, had to be so sweet. And you could tell on Sean McVay's face to not only knock off Kyle Shanahan, not only to get back to the Super Bowl, but all those demons like Jordan Rodriguez talked about with us from The Athletic last week, all those demons exercise in a big spot at SoFi Stadium.
Yeah, and it wipes away everything the Niners did to them before. It's like this was the one that mattered. It was mattered five times more than those six losses. And you could see the look on Sean McVay's face. I mean, this was pressure. This was pressure on the entire team. And they overcame a lot. They overcame, you know, the Matthew Stafford mistake. They overcame the fact that I thought their defensive line, the strength of the team, did very little for much of this game. Where was Von Miller for so much of it? That Aaron Donald's name was called at the most optimal time at the end to cause that interception. There's a lot to get into with this game too, but the drive that I felt maybe told me the Niners are slipping away, because we know that Jimmy G, he is a journey. I mean, and you have to sign up for...
Did you say journeyman? Yeah, I think I agree with you.
Well, yeah, but it's just like, I feel like it's weeks in a row where you're watching him throw passes that were, you know, I want to call them, but desperate, bordering on high risk, and he got away with a lot of that stuff. And today, he did not at the end. And I thought
they finally caught him. Somebody took the gift.
We had been calling for it for weeks, that at some point it's going to haunt them in a way that they're not going to be able to unhaunt themselves. And it happened today. The drive, though, for me, 17-17. There's six plus left. Total melt job by Jimmy G in the offense. They took 23 seconds off the clock when it would have been the patented time for Shanahan to get the ground game going, just to not even give Matthew Stafford and the Rams a chance back in. And they did. I mean, they let this game away, and the Rams, you know, you get a performance by Odell Beckham. It's like everything, and I know at this point this is not news, but all these moves they made, it was a year ago today that the Stafford trade was announced. To have known back then, a lot of people doubted that deal, that the Rams mortgaged their future, that a year later they'd be here. It's like...
And I certainly had fun with it when they had the tweet, we're all in after the moves that they made.
Right.
And then they were a little bit, you know, on and off for a stretch there during the regular season. And it looked like, man, are they not only going to never have any premium draft picks, but they're going to go all in and they're going to fall short. And yet here they are, like the Bengals, another four seed, Greg, that got hot, found themselves all of a sudden hosting the NFC Championship game and then executing in a way that San Francisco had executed against them in all those prior losses.
Yeah, maybe they're better off playing from behind. I mean, 17-7 entering the fourth quarter, and you go touchdown, field goal, and your defensive line and Aaron Donald and Von Miller and that group that had been quiet throughout the game beasted three straight drives.
Yep.
So it's like you don't need to. We don't need to hear anything about this team's toughness. I don't think toughness was ever the right word for it, because they also have won, been in some difficult spots this year and won tight games, not always against the top competition. But it was 17-7. Stafford gets the ball back, and it was just like bet. And it was, they went right down the field, and it was plays to Odell. It was third and sixes to Kupp. Really, the whole game, I thought the difference was the quarterbacks. And I know Stafford, until the end, his numbers weren't too flashy, and people are going to bring up that Jaquiski Tartt drop interception, and we can talk about that. But it's like Stafford played great in this game. And, yeah, he'll give the other team a couple chances, and he'll make a couple mistakes. But the reason they put up 20 in this game was all Stafford. Again, they weren't really running the ball. Again, they didn't really protect. Most of his completions were excellent throws. Like, most of their points came from throws into tight windows. The touchdown to Kupp was awesome. The out route to Kupp earlier that drive was amazing. He had another one to Odell. It's just like Jimmy G's not making those throws. Jared Goff's not making those throws. Maybe there's seven or eight guys in the NFL that are making those throws, and Matthew Stafford is one of them. And I know it's not like a great home crowd here. It was definitely split. But that drive you mentioned where the 49ers started turtling up, like, that was after the Rams just scored 10 straight points, and the Rams fans were loud when the 49ers were on offense, and it was vice versa, and it felt like that was making an impact, and the 49ers were feeling it at that point, and certainly Aaron Donald was feeling it.
The one thing, I mean, had they lost, the Rams, it would be a really, really rough couple of weeks for them, because I also found them to be, and they got to clean this up, disorganized pre-snap. These timeouts they call when you're going to try to avoid like a delay of game scenario. It's just like, this should not be happening to this Rams team under Sean McVay. They took a terrible challenge at one point that I don't know who's in Sean McVay's ear. It went south, but it's like, how are those decisions
being
made? They
had no timeouts for the last 6:50 on the clock, which Terry Bradshaw mentioned.
Terry Bradshaw's asking the question.
The first thing he said to McVay was about the timeouts, and he got the facts wrong. He said, you only had one timeout with 7 minutes to go. No, it was even worse than that. They had no timeouts with seven minutes to go.
And I thought that when he burned his final timeout on a challenge of a fumble on a play, it was fourth down, and they had their punt team on the field, San Francisco. He challenges it, trying to get the ball back in midfield. It was a terrible challenge, like Mark's saying.
Was he just desperately?
It felt desperation, especially when you realize the payoff is because you're getting the ball back anyway. Like, maybe it's like 30 or 40 yards field difference, maybe. But the opportunity cost here is like, or you lose the challenge and you have no timeouts and you end up watching Jimmy G kneeling on the football for 2 minutes to end the game. Like, it was that much. Now, the thing that I'll think about two things if I'm a Niners fan and I'm dying. And by the way, we could talk about how the Rams did a nice job, the fans filling that building. We were across the street in the newsroom. After the game was over, I went to the glass and looked out, and it was all 49ers fans just filing out. Now, maybe Rams fans are there watching
ceremony. They're watching the ceremony.
But I'm telling you, Greg, let's not carry any water here. Tens of thousands of San Francisco fans were in that building.
It sounds like at best it was half and half, but it was probably more 49ers fans,
but
which is wild.
So that had to, for all the things that had to feel so good for McVay and the Rams, that was a tough situation. The build-up to this week about how there was going to be all these 49ers fans there. You sent all of them out of your building in a sour mood. My other thing I think about is Kyle Shanahan at midfield. He put his offense back on the field after that lost challenge by McVay. And I'm thinking, man, that would have been an incredible kill shot to send McVay into the offseason. If you would have, after he blows his last time out on a bad challenge and puts himself in a terrible situation for the rest of the game, if you then would have gave it to Deebo Samuel on 4th-and-2 and converted a first down, then we could be talking about a totally different outcome right now. And he didn't do it. I thought that was conservative.
It was a sloppy game in many ways for both teams. So whoever lost is going to go have a lot to think about. And if you're the Niners, it was a rough one.
But to Dan's point on that fourth down, they hit that deep throw to Odell Beckham, another great throw, two plays later. They were back at the exact same yard line that Kyle Shanahan. And it gets back to what I've been talking about on the show. Both of these guys have this weird inherent conservatism streak in them in terms of fourth downs. Even McVay kind of played for the field goals on their last two field goal drives, and it worked, and that's great. But there is something about them that's like inherently
Well, they're progressive in terms of their view on offense and scheme, but in terms of like the tactician of like a game day, how I handle my team, they are a little conservative, surprisingly. So can we hear the –
Sorry for cutting you off there, Mark.
I'm going to tee you up on this one, Mark, because –
Oh, well, let's see what it is.
Yeah. The other thing that's going to stick to Niners fans, of course – Jaquiski Tart, the safety. There is 9:55 to play in the game, and the Niners, I believe at this point, are holding on to a 3-point lead. And Stafford drops back to pass and throws a balloon into the middle of the field. I would like to hear the Niners call this, because this was another huge moment in the game.
Stafford back, gets in as he throws deep downfield for Van Jefferson, and the ball should have been intercepted. It was dropped. Jaquiski Tart had the interception on the 49er 32-yard line, and he dropped the ball.
And he is sick. The ball is underthrown, and Tart flat out drops it. It couldn't have hit him any better than it did, right in the V of the neck.
Great call there. Yeah, it was 17-17 at the time. And after that play, immediately after this drop, it should be Niners ball with a chance to take back control of the game. He hits Beckham Stafford for 29 yards and then a penalty on Ward for unnecessary roughness. It becomes a 45-yard play. It leads to what ends up being the deciding points.
Mm. Yeah, man, I think if you're a quarterback and you go, you know, Kevin Patcher, our friend who wrote up the game, called it a YOLO ball for Stafford. You know, you only live once, which I think we...
Weird spot for a YOLO ball and 10.
No doubt.
At your own 15.
I think we also banned the phrase YOLO on this show.
I think it's gone.
Okay.
It was gone from culture. And now you just brought it back in a big spot. So we got to work past.
Well, I referenced someone who brought it back. That's what I did.
Got it.
This is the thing. Like I know it's like the one thing about the NFL right now, like every Jimmy G is getting destroyed on Twitter and all this stuff. Like there's just a part of me that's like, I feel bad for Jimmy G. Okay. I feel bad for Tart. I mean, who tweeted out after.
Bummer.
No excuses. I deserve all the criticism my way. The opportunity I dream of, I came up short.
Oof.
I let my brothers down. I mean, first of all, you're taking accountability. But secondly, I mean, yeah, he's going to think about that every moment of every day.
Right.
It's
Well, that play you mean specifically or
the whole dropped
game?
Tart's dropped interception. It's like that would have ended this. And we'd be talking about Matthew Stafford's two killer mistakes in this game versus saying Matthew Stafford played.
The game's tied there, right?
It's tied.
Yeah.
But that was their – they're never – from that point on, their season slipped away because they gave up the drive and then Garoppolo then takes the hit and throws the ball up for grabs.
That stuff, it you can always do that, though. Like Jalen Ramsey had two potential pick sixes in the second half that he dropped, which – like he would be living with that for the rest of it. He's such a competitor. I would imagine it's killing him right now that he did not make the big plays in the big moments when he could. But he had his defensive guys around him to step up. I really do think that's what makes this Rams team unique, special. You know, potentially a championship team. Is this defense really is great? And I know it didn't feel like they were getting after Jimmy G that much this game. They stuffed the run. I mean, that fourth down that they didn't go for, Dan, it was because Eric Weddle came up on a run blitz fit and stuffed him. And then the next down, it was Gaines and A'shaun Robinson who stuffed him. And you look at Elijah Mitchell on the day, 11 for 20. This dude has been killing everyone all year. This running game is what they're
built on. I got you, Greg, but like, give it to Debo and see what happens.
But Debo even, you know what I mean? 7 for 26. Like,
well, here's a stat to your point. I wrote this down. San Francisco, in their first five playoff games with Kyle Shanahan, averaged 177.4 rushing yards per game. That's 5 yards a carry average. Today, 20 for 50, 2.5 yards a carry.
Right, and like I did the Sky Sports hit going into the fourth quarter, and Baldy was just talking about this is where, like, what's happening. Aaron Donald hasn't made a play all game. It's 17-7 at that point. Like, Aaron Donald needs to be the one who makes the play. If he's going to be on the sideline trying to fire everyone up and change, and he did. He had two QB hits in that fourth quarter, and it's like everyone's going to kill Jimmy G for throwing that pass. If he doesn't throw the pass, he's taking the sack, and it's fourth and game over, fourth and 20. And if the guy doesn't drop it or it hits the ground, it's 4th and 10, and they're going to win the next down anyways because they
were
going all over them at that point. And they stepped up. We talk about quarterbacks stepping up in the fourth quarter. Like, those dudes stepped up in the fourth quarter.
Let's hear from Aaron Donald. Our boy Steve Wyche interviewing Aaron Donald on the field, and I think Von Miller crashes into the interview. You know that thing. I always wanted to be part of that thing.
Right.
You win a big game. Well, we kind of did with Wes and company when we won the Shield titles. We were interviewed by Quang Lem on the desk, and I believe there was
a moment.
Maybe Wes was being interviewed, and I just like went over Wes's shoulder. He's like, "We did it, man." He's like, "Oh man, you're a real star." And he's like, "No, you are, bro." I think that moment might have happened.
Well, it was. I think that you know, that was you kind of you're sort of the person that showed us how to do that. That you did a
Thank
nice
you,
job
Mark.
With that.
And Greg, you got a trophy too when we went back to back. The Shield.
Oh yeah,
I was the general manager. Do we not?
I was the Odell Beckham. No, they would have had to win a title. You know, I was a big free agent signing and
big signing.
Made,
we needed
made
that.
Sure it didn't get stale in the club.
Let's hear Aaron Donald after the game with Steve Wyche.
What about the way the defense held up? You go into the fourth quarter down 17-7, and you shut them out to give your offense enough time to rally.
I brought the guys up. We got too much on the line to lose. Way too much on the line. Everybody bowled up, guys started flying around. And we flying around and made big plays when we needed to.
And also, lastly, the pressure you got on Garoppolo that led to the sack to seal the deal. What about that play?
Just being relentless.
That was me and Wes.
Ain't no way we're going to do it. Ain't no way.
That's amazing passion. I love it. Great job by Wyche in a big spot there. And there was a great moment in the game. This is 17-7. Donald is one of the great players in the history of the sport. In his prime, he's been to near the mountaintop once. He's been to the Super Bowl. He's been part of some disappointing Rams teams through the years. And you see him pulling those guys together on the sideline and giving them that exact message that he just explained to Wyche. Clearly, he's like, guys, we cannot let them move the ball again. We are better than this team. We need to win this game. And literally from that moment when Fox caught that on the sideline, their defense never gave up another yard in that game. So,
and they were in, like,
that's Donald.
That happens sometimes, and you can see these players, you know, with all their bluster, and it's like the other teammates are kind of like, all right, let's wait with Aaron Donald. No, because they were like, it was a moment of total sobriety. They were nodding along with him, and it changed them entirely. And the Rams in general are an advertisement on team building because it's like, go get these stars. Give them a little bit of time. They're going to peak at the right moment. And you're going to have so many Odell Beckham disgruntled wide receivers and other players midway through next year saying, get me out of this trash city and take me somewhere special.
Let's talk Odell after the break.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Let's talk Odell because he really did. He profiled as an important guy in this game because the Rams need that. They need that secondary receiver. They lose Tyler Higbee to injury earlier in this game. So then Beckham becomes an essential figure. Kupp is going to do what Kupp does. 11 for 142 and 2 touchdowns on 14 targets.
He is brilliant.
He is the MVP.
And he had a drop. Those numbers could even be bigger. But he made every other play in this game and is such a money player, one of the best wide receivers in the sport. But Beckham First 100-yard game since week six of 2019 with the Browns. And we had been waiting for Beckham to have this type of game. He didn't find the end zone, but he was 9 for 113. And every time Stafford looked for him on 11 targets, Beckham was there, ready to play, and made the big plays that, frankly, so as someone who's been vocally critical of Beckham, and I still hate the way he kind of got his way out of town in Cleveland, but you have to give it up to him because he's now really proved himself, Mark, a guy that for all the ups and downs of his career, when the spotlight was bright here with L.A., he really has answered the call.
Absolutely. Like, I don't like the exit either, but that's secondary, and that's in the deep distance at this point to me. It's like he was looking out, I think, for how he'd be remembered as a player, and we do think of him differently now. And, I mean, it took a little bit of time, but it was also Matthew Stafford's first season in this offense too, and I give the Rams a lot of credit for honestly going for it and not in foolhardy fashion. And, like, the way that it's working for them, it's because someone like Les Snead chose to think totally differently about building a team than other teams do.
I mean, Odell was found money. He got his way out of the Browns. But it's not like they had to trade for him.
But they did have, they did call him up, though, and explain how they'd use him. Like, it wasn't just about money or where he, like, they made it clear to him that that was the landing spot, and they were right.
And then Robert Woods blows his knee out.
Right. They did a great job. They did a great job getting him, building a program to get him to the point. But it's sort of been lost in the shuffle. Like, he's getting paid, you know, the same as, like, Will Fuller gets paid for 8 games. Like, he's just getting a half a season at $4.5 million. I mean, that is incredible.
I think he got a $750,000 bonus
now
winning.
He keeps getting more bonuses because they win, and it was tied to winning, which is brilliant, too. But it's like every team's got a weakness. And all year it was like, how are the 49ers overcoming these cornerbacks? Like, how are they doing it? Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, D'Amico Ryans and the pass rush are just overcoming it all. And I think today was a day where it hurt them because you just can't cover two guys on the outside. They had to leave Odell Beckham by himself while Cooper Kupp was getting doubled inside, and Odell beat him over and over. Whereas the Rams' weaknesses, in theory, I don't think showed up as much. Some of their linebacker play where they try to get cheap, Troy Reader had a tough day. But, like, they lose their two starting safeties during that 49ers collapse, and they bring in Nick Scott and Weddle, and those two dudes have been awesome. And I think that's I get on McVay for some of the things he doesn't do as well. I get the feeling like Belichick, he is about as good a tactician in terms of, like, practicing and building up their skill sets and fundamentals and, like, getting guys into the right positions and knowing the roles and having a vision for those roles and getting his coaching staff to all coach up the way he wants it to, because they can lose guys. They have so many, like, random guys that just most NFL teams don't have at, like, minimum salaries that just come up and play at a very high level, and, like, the coach should get a lot of credit.
And
for
I thought he did a very Shanahan type thing that I sent a message early. And I love this. When they had an 18-play drive that started on their own 3-yard line, 97 yards, they go over 10-plus minutes. And basically, that's exactly what the Niners did out of the gate to L.A. in that Week 10 smashing when Stafford threw two picks to open the game and everything felt lost for Los Angeles. People came out of that asking about their identity as they went into their bye week. And I think Sean McVay was embarrassed by that. And he's in a totally different place now.
The Rams had 11 third-down conversions.
11 for 18. I mean, that's...
And the Niners, the pass rush was working, too.
That's quarterback play. I don't want to hear about the Tart thing. And I know Stafford threw behind Kupp, and it was a bad interception in the end zone early force set. First of all, Skowronek dropped the 50-yard touchdown. Kupp dropped a potential touchdown. But that 11 for 18, like, that was Stafford. And that, like, there weren't a lot of bubble screens on those. In fact, a lot of the seven third downs they didn't pick up were because Sean McVay was, like, late in the game, like, throwing passes that had no chance to go to it and wanted to be conservative. Like, Stafford was money on the money downs. He was so good this playoff run.
This is interesting. Skowronek was only on the field because the Rams went no huddle after a third down conversion. He had come in for Odell to block. And then he finds himself all alone in the end zone. And that was one of those
Would have been a great catch, but...
Oh, that was
He's an NFL player.
It was one of those plays... Watch it again, Mark, because it was like one of those plays where it hits a guy's hands and explodes off his hands like he was a guard. I was like, oh, no. I felt bad for him, but obviously that was not his moment to shine.
Right.
But Stafford overcame it. He wasn't perfect, Greg, so you can't overlook it, but he had so many big throws.
His first interception, he was off the mark on that throw,
too. I get it, but even the throws to get – he wasn't perfect at all, but he was significantly better –
he's been great the whole playoffs.
Than every quarterback he's gone against. And like,
no doubt.
And just the quality of the throws, I guess, you can't underrate because he's doing things that other guys can't do. Guys other than Odell and Kupp, other than Kendall Blanton, who had a great game at tight end, had 9 targets for 7 yards. So, like, it was all Odell and Kupp.
Well, you may have to do it again because you don't have Tyler Higbee necessarily for this game. We don't know what's going on with his. But I kicker club scenario, I would be concerned with if you're the Rams about Matt Gay. It just does not seem reliable to me on any level at this point.
I think he missed the net with his first attempt. He did, you know, even though they weren't difficult kicks per se, hitting those two in the fourth quarter helped put him into the championship game. Listen, I feel good about where the power rankings are. Going into the Super Bowl, very clearly, the Bengals have the edge there.
Not a lot of mystery around that.
That's a big edge for Cincinnati. It is great. The Stafford story it's a great story. Knowing everything about him and where he came from, Detroit, and now either he's going to win a Super Bowl, or the Bengals are going to shock the world and go from last place to Super Bowl champions. There are a lot of great storylines. This is a great storyline Super Bowl, which is a nice thing for our show.
And it's fresh. I mean, this Rams team winning would be fresh. And this has been a long build. I mean, they were third in wins in the NFL since McVay's gotten there behind the Chiefs and the Pats. So it's like they've been knocking on the door, and now they're trying to get through, and nothing tops the Bengals, though. Come on. You can't. By the way, you can't get Trey Lance in there for one of these short yardage plays. I know this.
Oh,
is
they're
like,
going to get Trey Lance in there.
I know, but
week
it's like
one, September.
Greg is shouting so loud.
Why are you
that
yelling?
My ears, like literally, Lance, I need to see a doctor.
The Lance thing drives me crazy because the last couple of weeks in these games where you score 6 offensive points last week and this week, you couldn't have used just.
Yeah,
you couldn't have figured out a way to.
They know more than we do, Greg. And
I'm just talking about
Shanahan
the running
plays.
Short yardage.
It's okay.
Short yardage.
I understand what you're saying, but I remember sharing this quote that I read somewhere that Shanahan didn't like mixing and matching the QBs. He thought it messed with the flow of the offense. There was something about this. I don't think anybody could have predicted this is how the Niners' first season with the number 3 overall pick would play out, where he's in the mix for 6 or 7 weeks. He has a spot injury start, gets hurt himself, disappears, and then is no longer part of the team mostly.
I don't care about the flow.
Like, I'm just saying, I think he's probably...
You probably also don't care that Leonardo DiCaprio was in the crowd, which that was essentially all I was focused on for much of the second half.
I mean, that was a big moment for you.
I think for anyone with
you
taste,
know, I ran into...
We were a little worried that he was not going to do the show because he was just going to leave and stalk Leo. He's like, he had never been that... He wasn't aware that he was...
It did occur to me that he was like literally 4 football fields away from my desk seat.
Right before we started taping, I ran into Scott Hansen of Red Zone fame. And Scott, he told me a corker, a Leo DiCaprio story he had. Now, I can't share details of it because I don't want to betray Scott's confidence because I think we might have a growing friendship now. It's in play.
Yeah, I think if you're the listener, let your imagination soar. It was that juicy of a story.
But he told me a winding tale of Hansen and DiCaprio in a big spot and DiCaprio being on the wrong side of history in a big spot. Maybe
he goes there sometimes.
If you see me in Los
Angeles.
He's
on the right side of history now. Lifelong Rams fan. I mean, he was living and dying with the Van Jefferson drops and everything. He's not
technically big enough a football fan for Greg, so he's not allowed in the...
He's a huge Rams guy.
If you see me in Los Angeles this week, listeners, and I'm maybe sitting, I'm saddled up at a bar somewhere, and you want to come up to me and be like, I would like to hear the Scott Hansen story about Leonardo DiCaprio, I will tell you that story privately.
Well, it should make Hansen feel very comfortable.
I won't broadcast it, but I'll tell it at the tavern.
Okay. Well, I think we're all breathless at the concept of that, so.
All right. Any other thoughts on the NFC Championship game? Greg, this is a moment for you now. I know you have a lot on your mind. There's any other thoughts? We're all, And no, but just
now
to button
just
up
like football thoughts, not just big the picture thoughts,
just to button up the Jimmy Garoppolo. That was in all likelihood his final game with the 49ers. I believe there was a stat entering the game. He was 35-15 as a starter entering this game. So we're about to, you know, the rubber's about to meet the road, and you're going to learn more about Garoppolo, I think, wherever he ends up next, because I don't think that accurately tells you who he is as a quarterback. However, I do think even if his value took a hit during this playoff run, there's going to be a team that looks at that record and looks at the success the 49ers had when he was involved and will say he's our QB1.
You
I
just
think that's going
to
happen.
You'd have to, like, if you're a front office, also note that he's in the offense that is going to maximize every quarterback that's ever in it under Shanahan. Like,
oh, there's a major buyer beware here. I'm just saying, I think there's a team out there, and it's not a market flush with options for veteran quarterbacks that's going to identify him. Whether I don't know, name it, Indianapolis. Somewhere.
Someone's trading for him. Forget like him getting cut on that contract. Someone's looking at that contract and saying, "Yes, please bring him to Carolina or Pittsburgh or New Orleans or somewhere."
And what happens
it's
after
happening.
That? We'll see, and I have my doubts personally, but I think he is a starting quarterback week one, but it will not be for the 49ers. Now, is it Trey Lance? It has to be, right?
It has to be.
If it's not Trey Lance, there's something going on that we have not been privy to.
I don't know if anything has to be with the quarterback market in the NFL at this point.
This didn't feel as much like a Jimmy G game, though, like a referendum on that he's not great.
But the whole three-week stretch. I know they won two of the games.
Yeah,
but
even the
Week 18 game. And just that everything has to be to the middle of the field. I mean, there's just like nothing to the outside. I do feel bad for Nick Bosa and that whole group up front. And that's part of the reason why I'm honking about Stafford so much is they were amazing. Bosa beasted, Armstead beasted. They had, I think, 10 quarterback hits. They were all over Stafford, which is why I was so impressed.
This would not be something he would share, Kyle Shanahan. But I wonder if he thinks about it. Yeah, we had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter of the NFC title game. By the way, I think they had a double-digit lead in the Super Bowl as well, and that got away. But I wonder.
21-10 fourth quarter. He also was the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. Not sure if you're aware of that.
A certain 28-3 scenario. But I wonder if he would ever think to himself when he puts his head to pillow, man, if I would have put the kid in.
I don't know. Did Trey Lance ever seem ready for all of this?
I don't know. He never really got the chance.
It's instructive to me that they rode this Jimmy G like roller coaster the way they did.
They were about to go to him, though. Remember, he was hurt at the moment that they lost that Colts game in the rain, and it felt like that was he wavered and said, "I'm not sure if Jimmy's going to start next week." But then Trey Lance wasn't even healthy enough to play. It was a weird sliding doors moment.
Sliding doors? Sliding doors. Give us a sliding doors siren, Ricky.
Here's the real sliding doors, and yes. I know I'll sound like a homer here, and everything would be different. So who knows? But if you told me that the 49ers would be in the Super Bowl if they had drafted Mac Jones, I would buy that.
Well, Mac Jones had a really nice rookie season.
I think that's who Kyle Shanahan wanted initially.
Speaking of Mac Jones and Patriots homers, yes, Tom Brady may be retired. We felt like this show was a show that should be dedicated to the two games that determined the Super Bowl combatants, and it turned into the Wrestling Bowl. But yes, Tuesday's episode of the Around the NFL podcast, we will be diving deep on Brady. Hopefully we'll have some resolution on his status, but it certainly feels like now with the reporting that he will be retiring after 22 years. I will owe you guys sandwiches. I'm still surprised, and I'm still not totally sold. I know everything is pointing to, and Rap Sheet even said, Rap Sheet came out and said, "Oh, FYI, he's still going to retire. He's just," and now I'm paraphrasing, "he's pissed at Schefter. He doesn't want Adam Schefter on a Saturday morning telling the world that he's quitting the most successful career in the history
Darlington.
Of the sport."
You got to put Darlington's name in
And
there.
Jeff Darlington. Yep. Put some respect on his name. But he is going to retire still. He just didn't like the timing.
He wants to announce it in his little TB Times newspaper thing that he puts out there.
There is an interesting discussion to be had about how this whole thing has played out and his dad and his agent pushing back so hard, but we can have that discussion.
We will
Tuesday.
Talk about that Tuesday. We'll also talk about how the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will have the number one overall pick in the 2023 NFL
I don't know. You know what? If you're a Bucs fan, it was totally worth it.
Right.
Oh, for sure.
But right back into the darkness. But it was
you are deep in the darkness.
It was a quick trip out of the darkness. It doesn't feel very long.
I wonder if we see Todd Bowles, you know, head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Well,
Byron Leftwich.
I don't know if I want that.
I read Bruce Arians apparently is telling all his coaching staff to go ahead and interview and take jobs, even if there's no promotion involved. Just go ahead.
I told you he was not into this.
Well, I don't. I agree with you.
All right.
You're going to take credit for this being the right call?
Sure, I will take credit for it.
Takes never expire. We can also talk about, Josh McDaniels is the Raiders coach.
How about Brian Daboll, the Giants?
That's a lot
going on. This the Tuesday pod?
I know. Let's dive in now.
You know, we can also talk about.
I'm just saying.
So we're going to hit all these big league storylines, of course, and then we do like to do a show during the ramp up to the Super Bowl where we don't use the word or the word Super Bowl. I don't know if that's Tuesday show, but at some point we might want to challenge ourselves because we got
Thursday perhaps. I think that's often the time.
We have 2 weeks ramping up to the final game of the season. If you don't count the Pro Bowl, no, I do personally.
I know that's when you're going to be ponying up at this bar, telling everyone about Scott Hansen's story that was told to you.
Belly it up at the bar, spilling house secrets. This is your chance.
Wes, by the way, would not watch a second of any Pro Bowl, so that's what I'm going to do, not watch a second of it. Sorry, NFL, I know it's, you know, touted as this high level event. Greg's not saying a word. He won't speak against it. It's, you know.
It's for kids. I decided it's for kids. It's for kids.
My kids actually are really into the Pro Bowl. Yeah. They have been talking about it and looking forward to it, and they think it's a bigger deal than basically every game except.
Well,
the
think
Super
about
Bowl.
It.
I liked it when I was young too.
If you're a kid, the idea is all the best players on every team are now playing in a game against each other. Cool as shit.
I mean, it sounds great. Except
watching that.
Every best player giving 20%.
We get it. Gotcha. We're all on the same page.
I will.
But the kids don't know that.
I'll get in line and start.
The idea is really good.
You think the kids are watching like the blocking schemes and the effort of the tackling?
Right. Mark, you
could say to your kids, "This is not a quality product. I'm going to teach you to watch a quality product." But that's
Mark is that guy on Twitter, like arguing against no one, like a take, like he's arguing against someone that no one disagrees.
You're gonna chastise your children for watching poor quality football when they just want to see
a lot of great stuff comes out of it too. The personalities you get to see, like, you know, when they're throwing.
Well, I didn't realize that, I ran roughshod into three company men. I'm okay. It's like I like
woman.
You know, please.
Exactly.
Company people.
Mark. Wow.
Be obedient.
All right.
The Pro Bowl is a marvelous product, and it will be treated as such on this program, Mark.
Well, let's preview it on Thursday for 25 minutes then.
Don't.
That'd be quick.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a dare.
Let's do it then, if you guys actually feel this way.
We have some time to fill now. There aren't many games left. In fact, just the one in 2 weeks from tonight across
the
street.
I'll have a Wi-Fi issue that day.
We'll be there, by the way. We'll be at the Super Bowl. Can't wait. That is going to be a great week. We're going to be down at the Los Angeles Convention Center downtown. There's a whole, like, big, Ricky, there's a big set up.
iHeartRadio is putting a bit. You know how you used to go to Radio Row and you'd see, like, the big Sirius XM sets, or what was the big NBC set? This iHeart set blows it out of
the
water.
I want the Jim Rohn set.
Are fans allowed to walk around
No,
there,
you
like
have to be credentialed.
Because at previous Super Bowls, the fans were walking.
I think there is. No, you COVID can't come into the – well, COVID's different. But, like, you can't come into the row area without a credential, but there is – a part where, yes, fans
they're
can
roped
walk
off,
around
roped
the
off like animals, essentially. But they were within eyeshot of some of the activity.
Within distant eyeshot, yes.
In fact, there were a lot of fans watching Wes eat a softball pants that one time.
That's true.
There was a horde of individuals
that
watching
that. That was one of our memorable Radio Row moments.
They weren't maybe necessarily podcast fans. They were just watching the general goings-on, and were like, there's a man over there eating a giant hot dog with pieces of pants on it. So, you know, that's our podcast in a nutshell.
I'll always remember that. Well, Wes, the wager was if the Raiders win 10 games.
It was the Dennis Allen-led Raiders that were a disaster, and he was they won a couple at some point.
Wes hated that team,
right?
Or he didn't think they were any good at all, but they had this path that actually got them to the number of wins. Misremembering maybe a little of this, but whatever it was, it screwed Wes. And Wes was so confident that the team would fail that he said, I'll eat my softball pants.
I think it was they wouldn't win six because they at some point were getting close.
It was nothing great like, oh, they won 14 games.
Right.
And he did. We went after, I think it was the New York Super Bowl, and we found there was a hot dog stand with the largest hot dog in the world. Bought that sucker for $25, expense that, nailed it. And then we cut up the, and it was like, Wes, this is the only thing you need to do, Wes. You must bring the softball pants. Make sure to, this is pre-Lakeisha. It's like, Wes, the one thing you need to do is when you get on the plane, have the softball pants.
Did he?
Reminded him 14 times.
I forgot my pants.
He's like, my pants! And he had to like run out and buy pants, and it was a whole thing. But he did take a bite of that hot dog with a chopped up. There was even some zipper in there.
Yeah, there's a zipper.
Elastic.
Yeah. Right on the edge of the hot dog.
He ate more of the pants than he needed to.
Right. Well, you know, he was a man of his word. So.
So we're thinking about Wes now. We're going to be thinking about him forever. But now we have his childhood team, his complicated team, the Bengals, against the Rams, Lakeisha's team. So that is the Super Bowl, and we will be here to take you guys to the finish line. Anything else before we say goodbye?
Don't open it back up.
Too late. I threw it out one last time.
You want like a Juwan Jennings breakdown?
No, not.
What is it you're looking for? No.
Silencio.
All right. Let's go. Good stuff. Wow. Bengals, Rams.
That's crazy.
You can't make it up.
Still got mascara all over my sweatshirt. I'm crying all day. So great.
Emotions are high.
Total chick.
Till Tuesday. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.